You are listening to Natural Born Alchemist.
Welcome to episode number 344 of the Natural Born Alchemist podcast. My name is Alex and I shall be your host. And I hope that you subscribe to my YouTube channel. Today I noticed we just got 666 subscribers. And I hope you will be number 667. You can follow me in social media as well, mainly X Born Alchemist, and support the podcast on Patreon and Rumble as well. I have started releasing the History of Alchemy series, so please subscribe to that feed as well. You'll find the links in the program notes. And finally, why don't you leave a nice review on Spotify? Give us a 5-star. Now, in this episode, we are going to focus on the ancient past and answer some mysteries. It didn't begin with Graham Hancock, but Graham sure threw more fuel on the fire with his research about ancient history. One aspect that is still unsolved is how the hell did ancient people build those huge stone structures? Was it some mysterious technology? Was it aliens or just millions upon millions of slaves? In this episode, you'll get the answer. And I think your mind will be blown. Those structures like the Easter Island statues and the pyramids, they were simply cast in place. No need to move or lift any stone. The stones are artificial. No way, you might say. Well, have a listen to this episode. Before we get started with our guest Marcel Fauty, there are a few terms that are mentioned that I want to highlight so you can follow along in this episode a bit better. One term we use is geopolymer. A geopolymer is an inorganic, typically ceramic-like material. Many geopolymers may also be classified as alkali-activated cements. But the term geopolymer is also sometimes applied to acid-activated binders. They are mainly produced by a chemical reaction between a chemically reactive aluminosilicate powder and an aqueous solution that causes this powder to react and reform into a solid monolith. The most common pathway to produce geopolymers is by the reaction of metakaolin with sodium silicate, which is an alkaline solution. But other processes are also possible. Basically, in layman's terms, geopolymer is an advanced form of Play-Doh that eventually hardens. Another term is water glass. Now, that's not a glass of water. Water glass is also known as sodium silicate. Sodium silicate are colorless, glassy or crystalline solids or white powders. Except for the most silicon-rich ones, they are readily soluble in water, producing alkaline solutions. When dried up, it still can be rehydrated back in water. Finally, natron theory. Natron is a kind of salt which is abundant in the Nile Valley. People have been handpicking and collecting natron in baskets since ancient times. Ancient Egyptians used natron for many different purposes. Natron was also used to create glass, so-called natron glass, which is still the most common format of glass we use today. In fact, this happened way before the Egyptians even dreamed of having an empire. Natron glass is nothing more than natron, sand, and limestone cooked together on 851 degrees Celsius, which means Egyptians were able to melt natron since the beginning of time. When natron is heated to 851 degrees Celsius, it eats granite for breakfast. Natron theory is the theory that these ancient structures were cast in place. So now you have a bit of pre-knowledge. Let's get into the episode. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Thanks.
So can you tell the listeners a bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Marcel Fauti. I'm living in Hungary, Budapest. And nowadays, I'm just making some experience with stones. But before that, I used to be an IT guy, a programmer, and I quit that job. And I had a lot of free time to do something. So I started to search for mysteries to solve. And I just picked up randomly this mystery, this scoop mark mystery in S1. And then a lavina was started, and this snowball is getting bigger and bigger. So that's in a nutshell.
So how did you come up with the concept from the beginning?
I think we should start with this scoop mark mystery in Aswan, Egypt. So we can start talking about this. There are these depressions in the granite, which were made with giant spoons. These looks like it was made with giant spoons, and the granite was soft when they spooned it out, but it's impossible because granite is hard. So this riddle is hard. How did they do it? And I just choose this mystery absolutely randomly. I could start with anything else, but it was available. No one had a good idea what happened there, and the official explanation is just stupid. So I started to work with this, and I decided to solve this mystery because why not? That was the beginning. And watching these scoop marks, my first solution was not chemical at all, because I checked how modern humanity work with granite, how they cut it, how they work with it, how they shape it. And the answer was pure water. Okay, it's a high pressure water, but it's just water, a water jet. So at first I tried to create a big Flintstone-like water jet machine from wood and stone and leather. So just caveman resources. And it was a complete and total failure, of course. And after this first experiment with this caveman water jet machine, I turned to chemicals.
And this is where you came up with what you call the natron theory.
Yeah, it was a long story, but yeah, because when I started to investigate chemicals that can do harm to granite, and there is a belief that no chemical material can do any harm to granite because it's so hard. But as I ran through the list, yeah, most of the acids cannot do anything with granite. Most of the bases cannot do anything with granite. But there was an acid that can do, and this is hydrofluoric acid, which takes granite apart. So it's but the problem was with this is that it's lethal. So it's a very disgusting and dangerous acid, this hydrofluoric acid. So at the end, I ruled out that one as well, because you cannot store it in anything because it takes apart any container. So no, hydrofluoric acid is not a good candidate to do that. And after I realized that people were right, that no acids and no alkali can do harm to granite, I said to myself, okay, what other chemicals are there? And And this was the way to find a salt. And natron is a salt. And it turned out that natron at a high temperature, it's 851 degrees Celsius, will decompose granite for sure, because I did it a lot of times already.
So how do you think that they did that in the old days?
So it's still not natron theory. It's just a fact that natron, molten natron, can etch granite. But when you do this in your backyard, as I did, and you end up with some white powder, and you examine what's the end result of this process, and you realize it's water glass. Now that's a different picture, because when you do this with granite and it falls apart, the result of the chemical reaction is so-called water glass, and it must ring a bell. It rings a bell in those people who know what geopolymers are, because geopolymers are kind of, it's a different kind of concrete, without cement. And geopolymers are made from this water glass and another substance, metakaolin. But basically, the base of these artificial stones, because geopolymers are just stones, artificial stone, is water glass. Now, when you realize that if you do this with the granite, you end up with a material which is the main ingredient of creating artificial stone, now that's a thing. And this is when you start thinking that it's a bigger story than just playing in the backyard and do whatever you want with pebbles and granite. It must be a bigger thing.
Can you mix like a geopolymer with electrum, or like with silver or gold? Like if you cover a geopolymer with that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you can do that. There are guys in this community who are actually doing that and creating 24 carats gold geopolymers, or how to say, it's like an art, and yeah, you can do that. You can mix the two.
But you haven't done anything yourself like that.
No. I'm just trying to go this path that was given to me, that this eventually will lead to artificial stone, and that the megalithic structures are from artificial stones, and that the granite statues, the giant granite statues of Egypt, are artificial. And this is my path. I'm not an artist, so I didn't try to mix it with different metals.
But can't you tell? I mean, I don't know, but I imagine, couldn't you tell when you're studying an ancient stone if it's a geopolymer or like a fake stone or a natural one?
Yeah, it's a very good question again. And I just met a geologist last week and we clarified this, because before that, I used to think that they used the most modern 21st century analysis tools to tell apart which is which. But it turned out, I also realized that it cannot be done this way, because if you have mass spectrometry or the other ultra modern analysis tools, they are all incomplete. They all have their own blind spots. And these blind spots are at the wrong, the worst place they can be, because, for example, mass spectrometry cannot see oxygen, coal, and hydrogen. And most of these stones are oxygen and coal composites. So if you cannot see half of the material, you cannot see the material. But last week, I met with a geologist, a real one, a living one, and he told me that these fancy 21st century analytical tools are good for something, but not for this process to tell apart which is artificial and which is not. He told me, he explained me that they are using very old and very basic techniques to tell apart the natural stone from artificial stone, and it is weight measuring, heating, water absorption, color, some physical properties, and with these highly primitive methods, they can tell if it's natural or artificial. So there is a way, but it's not the 21st century highly advanced blah blah way.
Do you mean the people who've studied like the pyramids, they haven't really made sure the stones are natural? They just assumed.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good word. Okay, so when you start, when you are using these 21st century magic analysis tools, you have to start with an assumption that what you are looking is what it is, because it's half blind. So you are working with your assumption that it's natural. And if you start with this assumption, then you will find it's natural. So it's stupid.
It reminds me of, like, I used to live in Amsterdam, and when they were making new roads there in the city, they just put asphalt on the road, and then they had a huge like thing where they pressed on the asphalt, so it looked like cobbled stones. So instead of putting individual stones to make it look like cobbled stone, because you have to have cobbled stones in Amsterdam to not to break the illusion of the architecture. So when they make a new road, they just like how you make cookies, you know, they just like...
They are making fake stones from asphalt.
Yeah, so it looks good, but when you, with closer inspection, you see it's fake, you know, but it looks better than if it was just flat. It's kind of like the same method, but in modern times. I mean, the concept of like, because if what you're saying is true, then in a sense, making all these structures sounds very easy compared to before, where you thought, how could they have made them? Now with this thinking, it sounds almost like, why didn't they make more? Because now it sounds quite easy in a sense.
You mean the precision and these things. Yeah, and you cannot fit a razor blade in between and that, blah blah blah. Yeah, if you think about it, the silliest way to do an Inca wall is to lift a 20-ton stone several times to try it. You put it in, you see it's not perfect, you remove it, you carve it a little bit, chisel it and put it back, and it's still not perfectly fit, and you remove it a dozen times. That's just stupid. That's still silly. And okay, I leave these silly explanations to official sources, but we are not that silly. And the easiest way to create this precision and to avoid lifting 20-ton stones is just to cast them in place. Because if you cast them in place right into the wall, what do you have to lift? You have to lift the ingredients. You have to lift buckets, and that's all. And what about precision? Well, if you have a wet material cast, the precision will form automatically. You don't have to carve anything. So, and there are the shapes and patterns of molding in Sacsayhuaman, where you can see that they pushed wooden desk into the halves of stone to keep it in its place. So for me, it's obvious. For the archaeologist, it's not. It's far from obvious. They are still amazed how stupid or ingenious these people were, who were able to carve these stones this perfect. But it's
well, if this is true, it reminds me of, you know, like when you watch a magician and they make a trick and you're amazed how the trick was. But then when you find out what the trick was, you think it's pretty stupid. It's like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. And you lose a lot of mystery. So if it's just masonry and they poured in the mixed material, then there is no mystery about anything, no lifting, no precision, no, we lose a lot of mystery. Yeah.
It also explains that in such a situation, it would be logical to have thousands of slaves because they would have to carry the ingredients, you know, their ingredients are heavy, I guess, in a sense, but No.
The ingredients can be lifted in buckets. So why is it heavy? A whole stone is heavy, but a bucket of water glass is just a bucket of water glass.
Yeah, no, but it would make sense then to have, like, if you had slaves, they could carry buckets, you know. That's more logical than pushing a stone, you know.
Yeah. It's a meaningful work to carry buckets, but it's unmeaningful to lift 20-ton blocks or 60-tons blocks. That's stupid.
But apparently, then in Egypt, there's like evidence that they have used natron glass and all that. But it could be logical that they did what you say. But what about the other parts of the world? Is there evidence that they knew about this stuff?
Mm-hmm. So I investigated several places because to do this, to cast stones, you need this water glass thing. And to have this, you need natron, this salt. So I investigated whether you can find unlimited amount of natron nearby. Like there are carved temples in India. And caves and temples in India, carved, in quotation, carved from a single rock. And if you visit these sites with the magic glasses on, if there is unlimited natron source nearby, there is, and it's always all around the globe. The other and I've created a custom map. I'm ready to publish. I didn't publish it yet, but it's full of these sites. And it's surprising that even in Peru, if you have a megalithic or Inca wall, they don't call it megalithic. If you have an Inca wall in Peru and you look around where is the salt, you will find the salt mine in Salinas de Maras. And these sites, these ancient sites, are around this salt mine. It's a salt evaporation site, and all these megalithic walls are just around this, and other places as well. If you go to Turkey, there are these underground cities like Derinkuyu, which was able to accommodate 20,000 people, and there are hundreds of these underground cities carved into the volcanic tuff. But if you look around, where is the salt, where is the unlimited natron, it's there. And these sites are in a rectangle of salt lakes. So it's if you've seen it once, you cannot unsee it. So it's, and I can tell you any examples. So it's so obvious. One more example. There is a quarry, so-called quarry in China. Yangshan quarry, and it's a huge megalithic site. And I was looking for the natron source to etch this stone. Instead of carving, where is the natron to etch this stone? And what it turned out, I didn't find a spot with full of natron. Turned out is that the whole region is an ancient salt region, and the city where this quarry is was the center of this region, And there is a salt cultural center there, and the salt museum, and the salt this and salt that. So they've already finished producing salt there. But for thousands and thousands of years, this megalithic site was in the epicenter of salt production. And the list goes on and on.
Has the mainstream scientific community or archaeologists have they heard about this or at all?
I think they heard, but they are in silence, trying to ignore it. My guess, they heard about it because my reach is very huge now. So one of my articles or posts on Twitter was read more than 500,000 times. And if it's only 100,000 people reading it, it's five times, it's still 100,000 people, but I think it's more. And I can see signs of reluctantly accepting it in the communication of other people, but they do not contact me. They do not check the facts. They do not. They are just try to dig it in the sand and left it there in the sand of the Sahara, below the Sahara. But it's not below the Sahara anymore. I mean, the idea is out, so they have to face it one day.
So when you cast the stone like this, when you make it, you couldn't tell a difference with your eyes, right?
Yeah, because you put back the same granite grain. It depends what which stone, Inca stone or artificial granite. What?
I'm just wondering.
Okay, you cannot tell. You cannot tell without any equipment. Yeah. Because it's hard, it looks like, and you cannot break it with a hammer. Yeah, and if it's granite, then when you put back the same grains, the 1 billion, 1 trillion years grains into the geopolymer, it looks like it was always there because it's the same material that was in the natural one. So when you etch granite, it falls apart to water glass and granite grains, which are not from the same material. And those granite grains can be reused to create the geopolymer, and then the geopolymer looks like the original. Looks similar. Okay, let's say it looks similar to the original.
Because most people's perception of granite is it's eternal. You know, like you cannot. It's like the hardest stone and stuff like that. So to imagine it being able to mold it and change it like that, I think many people, when they hear it the first time, they're going to dismiss that.
Yeah, but the facts are facts. Granite is just a chemical composition, and 75% of granite is just quartz, SeO2. It's quartz, and quartz is quartz. And we know that humanity uses quartz for a lot of different reasons, and we know that humanity can etch quartz and manipulate it and make silicon chips. So it's just granite has a, I don't know how to say, elevated brand or something that it's different. No, it's not different. It's the same as any kind of chemical compounds in the universe. It's not different.
I think I saw on your website there's a picture where you've welded a granite to a fake stone, like you glued it together somehow.
I'm not there to tell that I'm ready with the artificial granite, but that's not because the theory is bad. It's because I'm fighting with geopolymers, because it's a different story. I tried to create modern geopolymers first, and it's complicated. So maybe it's a little bit complicated than I thought. But what I was able to do is to create some kind of stone. So basically, I can create any stone, but it's not similar to granite yet, but it will be. It's more similar. It's like the Inca stones, this gray, dark gray material. That's check mark. That works.
And this also includes like the statues on Easter Island?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a different... Yeah, okay, sure. Because it was proven by Mr. Davidovich that it's artificial, because he did a chemical analysis and found organic material inside the stone. He found guano inside the stone. So if it's not artificial, then how is it possible to have guano in it? It's because the bird gods pooped into it. That's the other possibility. If it's either artificial or the gods put the poop in it, there is no other way around. So yeah, it's proven to be artificial, and my mix looks like the Easter Island stone very much. Yeah.
So when they make statues like that, you have to have like a cast where you pour it into that looks like that. But I mean, could you carve that from wood? What do you imagine they would pour it into?
Mm-hmm. And there is another way to have a consistency like a Play-Doh, and you just make the statue with your hand. So it can be, there is a video on Twitter, I'm playing with this black Play-Doh. So it's not necessary to have this giant mold, because you can build it up with smaller batches and form them and let them harden and put the next layer, so you can build it up this way.
I see. So, and it's not hot at that point. It's just...
No, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. Etching requires 851 degrees Celsius, but creating the stone it's a room temperature process. So no, you just mix the water glass with wood ash and let it cure, and that's it. No heating needed.
So it sounds even more ridiculously easy now.
It's oh, so blatantly easy. It's unbelievable. And that's why, and it makes more, I don't know what I wanted to say. So it's more feasible for ancient people to work with this, because it doesn't require any special knowledge to do this. Any.
Except that they have to come up with the concept, you know, of course.
Yeah, they have to try and figure out the secret formula, and they are done and they can do it. Yeah.
And then what do you think happened? People forgot about this and they rediscovered in the 20th century, or?
It turned out that some movement were present in the 16th century, 15th century, I guess, when this was known but forgotten again. If we look at the Easter Island example, we can clearly understand that they have just killed themselves, because they needed so much wood ash to create those 1,000 statues that they had to burn all the trees. And the myth is with us. So they cut down 16 million trees. Officially, they cut them down to make room for agriculture. That's stupid, because they cut down from the slopes, so it's not. And or for creating ships. But if they have created like 30 ships, cutting down 16 million trees means you have 500,000 trees to create one ship. How big is that ship? Bigger than the Titanic? So it's stupid. But the math will be precise if you know that they created 1,000 huge statues, and 60 million trees divided by 1,000 statues means 16,000 trees per statue burned will have like just a 16. Okay, 60 million, 16,000, 16. I cannot divide by 100, sorry, I don't know. So, but there is an amount of wood ash. I'm trying to hopelessly calculate. Let me use my calculator, I'm so stupid. What? So when you burn the wood ash is around 1%. So if we have 60 divided by 100, 160 kilograms only. I don't know. It's too low. I miscalculated something, but the 16 million trees for 1,000 statues to create it from water, glass, and wood ash, it's a close match. It's reasonable. While 30 ships, it's unreasonable. So, okay, that was the... Okay, so the Easter Island people, Rapa Nui, killed themselves to create these statues because they've run out of wood ash and they caused erosion. But this technology is a civilization killer everywhere. So you can easily forget the technology when you run out of resources and you cannot continue to do it. And the next and the second and the third generation will just forget it and go back to dark ages, I guess, because you burn down everything. So if you look, and this is another point I should and I will examine. These sites, these megalithic sites, are usually in deserted areas where there is nothing. And my guess is that this is because they did it because they needed the wood ash to create the stones. So they burned everything. So they basically ran out of resources and the civilization collapsed.
Is that why they claim that the Romans invented concrete? But maybe it's just like instead of an invention, it's more like a new way to do the same thing without having to burn trees.
Without those resources that do not exist anymore. Yes. Yeah. And this is the same what happened in Egypt, by the way, because the pyramids are from artificial limestone. And limestone is a quite different stone. It's from organic matter. It's from seashells and small living creatures' shells. It's not the same as a granite or basalt or diorite. It's not. And creating artificial limestone do not require these resources. So there is this old Egyptian guy who turned to be a god, Imhotep. And according to Davidovich, who is frequently called as the geopolymer pope, said that this Imhotep guy went to god status because he invented a new stone which does not require wood ash. And that's the limestone. And this guy made it possible for the Egyptian civilization to move forward after they burned down all the trees.
And then that's a natural progression then from that to inventing concrete, maybe.
Humanity always wanted to build things, and mixing different things is not a huge science. It's that they don't have to know what chemical reaction. They don't have to know the concept of chemical reaction at all. They just try this and that, and what sticks is sticks.
But it seems to me that the stones of these ancient structures is still more long lasting than concrete. So is it better, like in terms of like lasting longer?
I think it's a better, it can be a better quality. Yeah, it's very similar to the natural one. You just use a different glue. The original glue was quartz, and you replace it with aluminum silicate. But it's a quite a similar and simple structure, while concrete has a highly complicated chemical structure. Some people still say that we still don't know how concrete works, which is frightening because they are building 100-story buildings from it without knowing how it behaves after 20 or 100 years. So yeah, basically, so to say it with one word, the geopolymer is similar and a simpler chemical material than concrete. And that also means it can be more long-lasting, I guess.
In a sense, this is also a perfect example of Occam's razor, where the most logical answer is probably correct. Because when it comes to these ancient structures, you either go, we don't know, or they maybe had some advanced technology like magnets or I don't know, or maybe it was aliens or gods, all very illogical theories, but there's so many of them. Whereas this is the most, in a sense, boring and logical, you know, like it's...
Boring and simple, yeah, and logical. And how do you cut the stone when it's half soft? With a simple string. How do you drill those holes into the stone without a machinery while it's soft? Yes, you are using a wooden stick and that's it. So if you can cast a stone like concrete, everything is much more easier, like cutting it, forming it, shaping it, not lifting it, whatever.
Is there any like written evidence of these methods in any way?
Yes, we think there is. There is a wall painting called Tomb of Rekmire. It's a wall painting depicting Egyptians doing something which is officially smelting some metals, not iron, because they didn't invent iron yet, but smelting copper, for example. But they do it the most stupid way possible, because they are melting the copper on the floor. And this is so ridiculous. You know, you are melting the copper on the floor and it melts. And then what? Do you use a handkerchief to pick it up or small spoons? Why don't you melt the copper in a cup or in a bowl? What is this stupid thing melting it on the floor? Why? And we in the community figured out that this is not melting irons. It is melting the floor. This is etching the granite with molten natron. And if you use this idea, the whole picture is just meaningful, because it's hard to describe, but two people are standing on the two sides of a fire amber, and below the fire there is a bluish substance. This is natron, and they are using bellows, food bellows, to push oxygen into it to increase the heat. And after that, they are purifying the resulting water glass, and after that, they are casting stones. This is all depicted in one picture. And if you start with the official explanation, they are melting the copper on the floor, and after that, somehow they are building a wall, and it's totally, it falls up. It's not a cartoon this way; it falls apart. But if they start etching granite, and several steps later they are casting stones, that's a full story. So we believe that's the documentation from ancient Egypt, what happened.
Mainstream archaeologists or scientists could be difficult sometimes to convince, but alternative ones should be more open-minded. Have you reached out to anyone like Graham Hancock or similar people like that who could be open to the idea?
Mm-hmm. I just tried to contact one of them. I will not tell names, but he was like a mainstream archaeologist, close-minded, dismissive, ignorant. And after that experience, I stopped contacting them. I don't know how the others would react to this, but I finished. So this one example was so awful, I stopped. I don't care what they think, basically.
Because if I don't understand them sometimes, because if I was had this as my job and I heard this, the first thing I would try to do, well, I would investigate it to see if I could debunk it or something, you know, like not just dismiss it without looking into it.
Many of these guys from this community who are not archaeologists, but mythbusters, let's say, are also the same that they invested heavily into their works to prove that ancient machines exist or geopolymers suck or whatever. They spent years to develop a theory which is different from the official one, but still false. And then comes a simple answer, which is that simple, that Occam's razor turns in his grave, and they see the same as the official archaeologists, that their years of work is just nothing. And I can accept this feeling, but I cannot accept this behavior.
So in your opinion, what is the best argument, if there is any, that this could be debunked as maybe this wasn't what happened? Have you heard any like resistance that was an idea that, well, that's, I don't know how to answer that, or it's difficult to prove?
But it's okay, but it's working. It's not a theory. You can try it in your backyard and it works. So how can you refute it this way that it's actually working? It's a hard thing to do.
Without having studied it or done any scientific investigation myself, my first initial feeling was that, well, if you test these structures, maybe in those scientific tests you can see if it's fake or real natural stone. I mean, that would be the only way, I imagine. You know, that's why I asked that before.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah, sure. But they have to release the usual assumption that it's natural, because as we discussed, if you start with the assumption that it's natural, then it is. So because of the toolkit they use is half blind, so they need a good or bad assumption to build the investigation on it, and it's a trap.
Is there any like ancient structure where they have built with carrying the stones? Like, is there like where you could almost say like, well, here is an example where they actually try to do it the real way, or whatever you would say, and look how difficult they had. you know, like failed, maybe like they couldn't carry the stones or they gave up because it was much easier.
Right. Okay. I couldn't. Okay. So first of all, there is a depiction of Egyptians dragging, I've calculated by, I forget, a 60 ton statue across the desert. It's on the wall painting, and you can calculate the weight of the statue by counting the people who are dragging it through the sand, assuming that all men, strong men, can pull 100 kilograms, and they have 61 of them, or I can't remember the exact number, so that the weight of the statue is this and that. But it doesn't prove that the statue was created this way. It proves that they tried to move it later on. But to answer your other question, are there any examples of failures? But failures of casting? How can you fail with a cast? I cannot.
No, I didn't mean that. I meant like there must have been ancient cultures that didn't know about casting, so they tried to build structures by carving stones and putting them on top of each other. Is there like examples of that?
All right, yeah. The unfinished obelisk, which we started with, is a good example of a unfinished obelisk, because it looks like carved, but we already discussed it's not carving, it's spooning out. And it's still there in the pit, and the official explanation, and there are several others, I will tell you others as well, all around the world. The official explanation is that they carved it for months and months and months, and at the last second they realized they did it for nothing because they cannot lift it. Now I call this explanation that's a stupid explanation. So it's telling that Egyptians were so dumb they couldn't realize they are doing this Herculean effort without ever being able to lift it from the pit. There should be another explanation for this, that they left it there. And there is one official one, is that there is a huge crack on this obelisk, so it's a trash and they left it there. But what if it's not an obelisk? Why we think that it was carved out to be moved somewhere and stood up as an obelisk. Why? Because it's similar as an obelisk? I don't think it's enough. And that is something else. If you watch this obelisk from the air, you can see a slight color difference. It's greenish. It's not the same material than the granite around it. It's different. And if the color is different, this is according to my geologist friend, it's a different material. And it's not that this greenish color is here and there and on the obelisk. It's just on the obelisk. And on the other side of the pit, it's not greenish. This is one thing. The other, and I still don't know what is this if it's not an obelisk. I don't know. But there are other examples of failed experiments, like where there is a 1,000-ton stone in Lebanon, Baalbek. The stone has a weird name, the Pregnant Woman. And it's the same story. They carved it for months and months and years. They carved it from underneath. And right before they could lift it, they suddenly realized they cannot lift it, so they left it there. And there is another one on Easter Island. There is a huge Moai statue still in the pit where they supposedly carved these guys. And this is, surprise, surprise, carved out or edged out, carved from below, and then left it there because they realized that they cannot lift that they created for several months of work. So I think these examples, when they realize right in the same time that they cannot lift it, tells us a different story. This is not, these were not carved to lift it out from the pit and stood up somewhere. This is a different story, which we don't know what the real story is.
And do you think is this applies also to the Sphinx? That where they, do you think that's also been cast in this way?
I'm not an expert of limestone. That's limestone, again, like the pyramids. And I didn't examine limestone because it's not the geopolymer line. It's the artificial limestone line. And I didn't examine the Sphinx.
The reason I ask is because there's these theories where the head might not be the original head because it's so much smaller. So maybe they glued another later head on there somehow. But
and there is another explanation that there was a huge lion head on it and it broke, and they just recarved the broken surface to be a human. But I really didn't examine this, so I'm accepting what's told, and that's it.
Well, it's a fascinating topic, and I'm sure there are many people who are into the ancient mysteries that would be fascinated if they heard about this kind of stuff that you're talking about, because it does change the way you look at it, and also opens up the mind to think about things in another way. So maybe you do make new discoveries because you've dropped the aliens, you know, like ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is an endless list of mysteries to work with. So I'm not afraid of doing nothing when I close this loop and I will be able to recreate artificial granite. This one is a very good one, but there are others. For example, there are those pyramids on the Antarctica. That's very interesting as well, I guess, because for the last X thousand years, it was under ice, and still there are objects that very much look like pyramids. So I'm not afraid I will not find another mystery to go after that I finish this.
It's, and also, you know, as a final thing for me, when it concerns the ancient art of alchemy, it has a history in Egypt, and alchemy is all about transmuting different things and mixing things, and it's an old form of chemistry. So it would make sense if the ancient Egyptians had these skills, considering alchemy's history.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me mention Jeffrey Drum, who came up with the idea that the pyramids were chemical factories. And it's so compelling, it's so logical again, that the pyramids are not tombs. There was no pharaoh in any of these pyramids. There is no hieroglyph in these pyramids. And there is no written text in the Egyptian culture describing how they built the pyramids. That's why it's a mystery, because there is no written documentation of how they did it. If Geoffrey is right and these were chemical factories, then it's a whole different picture why there are no hieroglyphs, for example. So if you go to a factory today, it's just an industrial complex. You are not looking for cultural evidence of anything, and you basically do not decorate the factory with gods and poof. So it's a compelling story that, and he has a reason to tell this, because he has different models for different pyramid internal structures and explanations what a certain pyramid was producing. It's fascinating.
So if people want to check out your work, and where can they do that? What's your Twitter and or X and website?
Mm-hmm. Let's start with my website, because I think it's a good starter. It's called natrontheory.com. That's easy. And my Twitter handle is FOMAHUN. Sorry about that. But if they search for my name, Marcel Foti, it's me. So they don't have this weird handle. And it's on the page. So if they check natrontheory.com, my Twitter handle is on the bottom, and they can click on it and visit what I was doing in the last few weeks or days.
Cool. Well, I'll leave those links in the program notes as well. But thanks a lot for taking the time to be on the podcast.
Thank you for your kind invitation, and thank you for let me describe this for a wider audience. Thanks.
In a world veiled in mystery and driven by the quest for the impossible, join Alex on a transformative journey through the arcane art of transmutation. From ancient practices to the birth of modern science, we will uncover the secrets and stories of history's most enigmatic philosophers. The Natural Born Alchemist podcast presents a series that explores the trials, triumphs, and mystical pursuits of alchemy, the original quest for wisdom and power. Be sure to subscribe and unlock the vault of forgotten knowledge. Don't miss a single episode of this detailed telling of the history of alchemy, where we turn the leaden pages of history into podcast gold.
I will leave links to Natron Theory in the program notes. The website is pretty cool, so check it out, natrontheory.com. Now to close this episode, there's a song played many years ago called A Practice in Simplicity by Words Have Edges. Enjoy. And don't forget, freedom is in the mind.